The following is a presentation of Remnant. Finish the work you have started in me as I'm on my way to you.
Hi, this is Jerry Gotts, and welcome to Remnant Church Online. We hope that you'll find today's message challenging, full of hope, and most of all, practical. If you have questions, comments, or need a little more help on any of the issues that are raised by today's message, drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. Thanks a lot. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Gotze.
Love that song. Good morning. You know, this is a good summer for me. Not because it's not been hot, because, you know, I really think that every time it's hot and humid like this, God just in heaven looks down and says, you know, I never expected people to live there. Anyway, this summer, two of my favorite comic book characters got made into movies. The first was Iron Man. Now, I'm pretty sure, though, in the movie that Iron Man's ears didn't stick out of the side. And if you wonder why I have this, I bought these this morning, and my excuse for buying these was so that I could have them. The sermon was the excuse, but I'm going to hang them on my wall when I'm done. So Iron Man was always he was one of my favorites. The other, not too hard to figure out, was Batman. Now, you got to love this one, because this one lights up. Wait, that pushes on my nose. The eyes light up on this one, and it's broken. I broke it already. Oh, here we go. Wait. You got to see this. Oh, scary, huh? Oh, and blue. Ooh. Okay. I spent all of that money for that thing, and now I'm done. Okay. Now, the reason I always like Iron Man and Batman, I'm not a big Superman fan. Superman is just a bully from another solar system. Came down here, what? He's got superpowers? No. Gravity doesn't work on him like it does on his home planet. So now he gets to push people around. I don't care. You know, the Fantastic Four, what? They were freaks that got in some weird irradiation experiment. And, you know, now they're all messed up. The rubbery guy, he scares me. That's just creepy. Okay? But Iron Man and Batman were just regular guys. This is why they appealed to me when I was a kid. Because I knew that I was never going to fly like Superman. I was never, I hope, be that rubbery guy. Although the flame dude would be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool to be. You know, the flame dude. Whoosh, your hamburger's cooked. I like that. That's a good idea. But Iron Man and Batman were just regular guys who decided to make a difference. Something burned inside of them and they had to make a difference. See, I can relate to that. I can relate to guys who just want to make the world a better place. I can relate to guys who want to shoot that ice machine. So today I want to tell you a story about a guy who just was a regular guy, who responded in a spectacular way to a circumstance. We're going to call it Go Climb a Cliff. And this is two times in a row for me that I've spoken from the Old Testament. In fact, there are two chapters, one right next to the other. 2 weeks ago I talked about David and Goliath. Well, this is actually the story before it, about Jonathan and his armor bearer. So let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 1 through 14, or 1 through 23. And it says, one day Jonathan, son of Saul, said to the young man bearing his armor, come, let's go to the Philistine outpost on the other side. But he didn't tell his father. Now Saul is the king of Israel. So this is the king's son. Say, hey, let's go to the Philistine outpost on the other side of the ravine. Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree in Migron. With him were about 600 men, among whom was Ahijah. We'll skip those because they're all long. But no one knew was aware that Jonathan had left. Verse 4. On each side of the pass that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff. One was called Bozez, the other Senna. One cliff stood to the north, Michmash, the other to the south toward Geba. Jonathan said to his young armor bearer, come, let's go over to the outpost of these uncircumcised fellows. I like this now. perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few. Verse 7, do all that you have in mind, as armor bearer said. Go ahead, I'm with you heart and soul. Jonathan said, come then, we will cross over toward the men and let them see us. If they say to us, wait there until we come to you, we'll stay where we are and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, we'll climb up, because that'll be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands. So both of them showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. Look, said the Philistines, the Hebrews are crawling out of the holes they were hiding in. The men of the outpost shouted to Jonathan, his armor bearer, come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson. So Jonathan said to his armor bearer, climb up after me. The Lord has given them into the hands of Israel. Jonathan climbed up using his hand and feet with his armor bearer right behind him. The Philistines fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer followed him and killed behind him. In that first attack, Jonathan and his armor bearer killed some 20 men in an area about half an acre. That's getting some business done. You had to climb the cliff first. Let's pray, because I think God's going to open our hearts to some stuff today. Father, you've got some cliffs for us to climb. And each one of us has something we can do for you, God. We just got to take that first initial step. So, God, I pray you'll open our hearts this morning. Thanks. In your name, amen. I think everybody ought to wear an Iron Man mask every now and then, or a Batman mask, just to make you feel special. Now, you don't do it a lot in public, because if you do, people will think you're special in a different way. Here's the thing, though. You don't need a Batman mask or an Iron Man mask to feel special. All you need is to serve God. See, there's something special, there's something incredible about reaching out to other people. There's something great that we get inside of us about doing something greater than ourselves. I firmly believe that the most miserable people on this planet are the ones who don't help anyone else. I've never met somebody with a critical spirit and just these mean-spirited people, always whining and just mean and picking on everybody else. I've never seen that kind of person be a giver. I've never seen that kind of person be somebody who does things beyond themselves. They're always just seeing what's in it for me and what can I get? And that constantly being turned inward all the time makes you kind of gripey, I think. We got to get beyond ourselves. There's nothing like using your gifts to serve others. Now, let me tell you something. Everybody in this room has a gift. Now, I know. You may not think it's very important. You may not think you have much of a gift. But what gift do you have? Some of you can sing. Some of you can't. Please don't try. Okay? If it's not your gift, it's not your gift. Some of you can teach. Some of you can't. When I was youth pastor at Faith Assembly here in Imperial, in the middle of August on a day like today, and the air conditioners would break, Jerry Godsey, youth pastor extraordinaire, may I say, was not the most important guy at Faith Assembly. Pastor Brewer was not the most important person at Faith Assembly. The most important person at Faith Assembly was a guy named Larry Murphy. If you've been around Imperial a while, you may remember Larry's name. Larry was not a good singer. Not necessarily a great public speaker. Just kind of a good guy. You know why Larry was the most important person at Faith Assembly? Because he'd go fix the air conditioners. Now, you got 300 people waiting to come to church. They're not going to sit in a box that's a sweat box. And they're certainly not going to get anything spiritual out of it. Especially not the second service, because the first service, they're going to sweat into the pews, and the second service can have to sit in it. Nothing spiritual is happening from then on. See, so Larry couldn't sing. And Larry couldn't preach. But he did something far more important. He was able to be used by God. When the sound system needed setting up, Larry is the one who did it. When they needed to design a singing Christmas tree, you know, a place for all the choir to sing for Christmas, Larry's the one who designed it. See, that was Larry's gift, and he used it for God. Now, you may be thinking, well, I can't figure out how to use my gift for God. That's because you're not trying. Are you artistic? Great. There's all kinds of things you can do. Are you good at baking? There's all kinds of things you can do. If you bake good oatmeal raisin cookies without walnuts, you can be a blessing to your pastor. And if you can figure out how to make them sugar-free, fat-free, and still not taste like, you know, tar, you would be really a blessing to your pastor. Do not bake me cookies. Okay. No, do not bake me cookies, because I'm on a diet and I can't have them. And I'll eat them, because I'm weak. See, when I pray, I thank God for the opportunity to use His gifts. When I pray, I thank God for the opportunity to do things for Him. We get it mixed up sometimes. Using our gifts to serve other people is not something we have to do. It's something we get to do. See, common mistake that a lot of Christians make is that we view privileges as obligations. It's a privilege to serve God, guys. It's a privilege to serve God. I didn't have to come to church today. I got to come to church today. I didn't have to preach today. I get to preach today. I'd rather preach than eat. And some of you have seen me eat. You don't get this girlish figure without being able to eat. See, we've got to understand that we get to serve God. We get to use these gifts for Him. We're taught this whole God of the city thing. It's not that as a church we have to reach the city. We get to reach this city. We don't have to be used by God. We get to be used by God. To me, it's like if I had 2 tickets to the Super Bowl and I decided to take you and you sat through the whole Super Bowl like this. Is it over yet? I'm tired. I would just want to hit you. You're at the Super Bowl. These tickets are like $4,000 a piece, and you're tired and want to go home? What's wrong with you? If I took my wife to the Super Bowl, that's the way it'd be the whole time. Is it almost over yet? Honey, it's just kicking off. It's just starting. We got 3 hours to go. I'll just sit in the car and wait. Hey, we get to do these things. You know, I wonder sometimes if the thing that upsets God the most, or the thing that makes God the saddest, is not when we sin. It's when we have gifts that He's given us and we don't unwrap them. We have gifts that God has given us and we don't use them for His glory. Henry David Thoreau said, most men live lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with a song still in them. Hey, we've got to be doing something bigger than ourselves. Every person in this room, there's no such thing as a Christian who doesn't have a gift. So what are you doing for God with it? That's what we're talking about today. Abraham Maslow put it this way. He said, a musician must make music. A builder must build. An artist must paint. A poet must write. If he is to be ultimately at peace with himself, what a man can be, he must be. I think sometimes we're like players who play not to lose instead of to win. There's a big difference. You get these guys that are afraid of making a mistake while they're playing, and they make mistakes. I love football. Football season. Next Sunday is a holy day for me because it's the first Sunday of football season. I will wear a jersey next Sunday to church. It's for the first Sunday of football season. I mean, you got to do that. Now, you see these guys, though, that especially during the preseason, you see these guys that are trying out for the team and they're kind of tentative and they're cautious. And you can see they're making sure they're doing the right thing every time. Football is not a game you can play like that. You'll get killed. Football, you got to play with your heart. You got to play it with what I used to call reckless abandon. You got to just do it. Pin your ears back and go. You got to know what you're doing, but you got to pin your ears back and go. It's time for us as Christians to quit worrying about whether we're taking the right steps and if I, you know, and how am I going to look if I do this? No, no, no. Pin your ears back and serve God. We've got to serve God with reckless abandon. We've got to serve God and not care what somebody says about us. We've got to serve God and not care if we look good doing it. Well, what if I make a mistake? What if you make a mistake? I'd rather have you make a mistake trying to do something great than sit in your hands and not make any mistakes at all because you're not doing anything that way. I like Jonathan. And something, a couple of things I want you to take from this story. First of all, you can't be sideliners. We cannot be sideliners. Go back to verse 1. One day Jonathan, son of Saul, said to the young man bearing his armor, "Come, let's go over to the Philistine outpost on the other side." But he didn't tell his father. Look at verse 2. Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree in Migron. Israel is being held back by these battalions of Philistines. They're being pinned back. And what does Saul, the king of Israel, do? He sits under a pomegranate tree. Now, first of all, that's a bad idea. Pomegranates are hard and they're heavy. One hit you in the head, it could hurt. Maybe he's wearing a helmet, I'm not sure. Saul, you know, you can picture Saul, he's the king. He's sitting back there, somebody's feeding him grapes one at a time, somebody's fanning him. Instead of fighting on the front lines, Saul was on the sidelines. And this isn't the only time that happened. In fact, if you go back to 2 weeks ago when I preached about David and Goliath, Goliath, 9 foot tall guy. Now, again, that's a tall guy. He could play in the NBA. At 9 feet tall, he could play in the NBA. His head would almost dunk it. The basket's only 10 feet. This is a tall boy. And he came out every day and he defied Israel. And the Israelites all ran in fear. Now, the Bible tells us that Saul was a head and a half taller a head taller than everybody in Israel. The only one who matched up physically with Goliath was Saul. And does Saul go fight Goliath? No. No, David, the little shepherd boy, the little 13-year-old, 14-year-old freckle-faced shepherd boy. Hey, I'll go fight the giant for you. That guy? That's who Saul, the king of Israel, lets fight his battles. A shepherd boy. Hey, you can't sit on the sidelines. We as Christians don't get the opportunity just to sit back and say, hey, it'll be all right. We've got to do something bigger than ourselves. In his book, Seizing Your Divine Moment, Irwin McManus says that most of us are what he calls sideliners. He said that a sideliner is an observer of life rather than a liver of life. He argues that most people live vicariously. He says, we find our romance in You've Got Mail. We fight our battles through William Wallace and Maximus Aurelius. I was at a crime scene the other night, and the saddest thing about this scene was it was obvious that the person had traded what they were reading about and seeing about, their ideal, for a sham. See, if all we do is live vicariously, if all we do is read books about things and watch movies about things and never choose to really live, what good is our life? If we don't ever decide to really be something, if we don't ever decide to really be the person that God wants us to be, what good are we? I was in high school. I had a 65 Rambler Classic, my first car. That's right. A Rambler. I said it. It looked like a refrigerator had been tipped on its side. It was white, and it was a box. And I was getting out of it one day, and these junior hires walked past on the way to Wilson Junior High. Now, I hate junior hires. If you're a junior hire, no offense, but junior hires cause brain damage. I was a youth pastor for a long time. I know that. And this junior high kid walks past me and goes, "That ain't no car. Let's see, motor, four wheels, steering wheel. Yeah, pretty sure it's a car." He says, "When I get older, I'm going to have me a good car. When I get older, I'm going to have me a good car." Really? What kind of good car are you going to have? "Oh, I don't know. It'll be cool, though." "I'll tell you what, Haas. When you get your good car, you come back and talk to me." I'm not taking lip off some junior hire that doesn't even have a car. Talk trash about my car. My car's a good car. Kind of. And you get those people that'll kind of complain, you know, they'll stand off on the sideline and talk about how bad they are, how bad somebody's doing something is. I love these guys that talk about the guys in the NFL. "Oh, that guy can't play. He's horrible." Let me put this gently. You couldn't carry his shoes, let alone play. See that commercial they had last year where they got the guy sitting on the training table in the NFL locker room. He's sitting on the training table, and one guy walks in and he tells the trainer, you know, and his finger's like halfway sideways. And he looks over and the trainer goes, "All right, you ready?" And you hear him cracking as it puts it, and the other dude passes out. And it said, you couldn't do what they do. They're right. They're right. We talk about how bad these players are. We're nowhere near that good. Hey, quit being on the sideline and taking shots at the people who are doing something. Let's do something great. There's no place for sideliners in church. This is not a spectator sport here. This is not one of those places where you get to watch, stand off the sideline and watch and say, "Hey, well, you know." I love when they pick the pastor apart. "Oh, the pastor, yeah, wasn't really that good a message this morning." Yeah? Probably wasn't, but doesn't mean you get to say it. I served as a youth pastor at a church in San Diego, and one of our board members went out to lunch with him one day, and he sat and just ripped the church to shreds every Sunday. Had roast pastor for lunch. Now, I didn't agree with this pastor all the time either, right? He made some bad mistakes, but let me tell you something. You got to support your guy. He had three sons, and not a one of them is serving God right now. Are the two things related? I don't know. I do know that if you're a sideliner, don't make the mistake of taking shots at the people who aren't. But I don't think you ought to be a sideliner. I think there's something bigger than you. Don't be just an attender. And don't tell me, "Well, you know, I got problems, Pastor. I got problems. I got things going on." Hey, you got problems, I've got problems, all God's children got problems. How do you get past something big in your life? Serve somebody else. Why? Because it makes you realize your problems, they may be big, but they're not insurmountable. I told you a few weeks ago when our kids were little, we were going to the mall, we were going to get new shoes for the boys, and I'm grumbling. I don't know if you've heard me, but I can grumble. And I'm mad because we're buying shoes, and I think we just bought shoes the week before, and now all of a sudden these are like tatters hanging off their feet. And I'm grumbling, and I'm mad because these kids eating these shoes. Are you chewing on these things? What I'm looking at? I'm just mad. We pass by a woman pushing a wheelchair of a little boy about the same age as my oldest son. His hands are all gnarled up. Got an oxygen tank on him, and she's pushing him in a wheelchair. That kid will never wear out a pair of shoes. And I just began to weep. I said, "God, forgive me. I'll never complain about buying shoes ever again." And that, unfortunately, that's not true, because I did later on too. But hey, you want to get beyond your problems? See somebody else's. You want to get beyond yourself. And I'm not saying that your problems aren't big. They may be. They may be huge. Serve somebody else. Because if nothing else, it keeps you from worrying about yours. Carl Jung, the psychologist, said, he was asked one time, how do he help people get well? And this is what he said. He said, most people came to me with an insurmountable problem. However, what happened was, through our work together, they discovered something more important than the problem. The problem lost its power and went away. So what problem do you have? What issue are you facing? And again, a lot of us have issues, and we have to face them. Let's be honest. So how do you want to face that issue? Do you want to sit around and worry about it? Does that really help? No. How about going out and finding somebody else that you can help? You may say, you know what, I'm powerless to fix my problem, but I can help fix yours. Because what you find is that somebody else may be saying the same thing about their problem, but they can help you fix yours. We've got to get outside ourselves. We can't be sideliners. We've got to go serve God. Second thing you need to know about this is we all need armor bearers. Verse 4, on each side of the pass that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff. One was called Bozez. That's not the guy that made the movie. That was Borat. That's different. And the other, Senna. This stuff comes to me as I read these things. I just have to share them with you. One cliff stood to the north toward Michmash. I don't know where they get these names. Anyway, the other to the south toward Geba. Jonathan said to his young armor bearer, come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised fellows. Perhaps the Lord... No, wait. These are a whole army on the other side. In fact, if you read in 1 Samuel, you'll find out that there's a metal shortage and that there's only two swords, and Saul's got one of them, Jonathan's got the other. The armor bearer, he doesn't even have a sword. He's an armor bearer, not a sword bearer. So Jonathan says, hey, let's go pick a fight. Let's go see what happens. Perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Now let me tell you something. If I'm the armor bearer, I want more of a guarantee than perhaps. Perhaps is maybe so, maybe not. Hey, let's go pick a fight. Who knows? That's not what I want to hear. I want to hear Jonathan say, hey, let's go. We whoop their behinds. Let's go. Instead, he says, let's go look. Let's go check it out. See what happens. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few. Listen to the armor bearer. Do all that you have in mind. Go ahead. I'm with you, heart and soul. Saul sitting on the sideline. Jonathan's listening to the police scanner, hoping to find a crime he can go to. Saul, the king of Israel, sitting eating pomegranates. Blech. And his son is out there saying, hey, let's go pick a fight. Let's go see what happens. I love the armor bearer's response. Go ahead. I'm with you, heart and soul. See, we underestimate armor bearers. We underestimate the fact that we all need somebody beside us who's with us, heart and soul. The greatest thing you can get from church today, it's not my message, not the singing, it's the fact that you get to come and sit with people who will bear your armor. People who will tell you, I'm with you, heart and soul. We have Bible studies, Cleansing Stream, Holy Grounds. Why do we have those? So that we sit around and we each realize we're not in this alone. We each realize that there's something bigger than us and we need to be part of it. And you get pumped up. You realize you're not the only one with problems. I ran over a nail once, my tire, it got a slow leak. Every couple of days I had to refill the tire with air. A lot of us are like that tire. We leak air. We get deflated. We get flat on one side. Coming to church is a place, being in a fellowship is a place where we get reinflated. Being in fellowship is a place where our armor bearers lift us up and realize we're not in this alone. That's why you can't just come on Sunday morning and then sit down, eat a donut, and then leave. You got to fellowship. You got to talk to people here. You got to build friendships here. Why? Because these are the people who will be your armor bearers. These are the people who will help you when you need help. And by the same token, these are the people you get to be an armor bearer for. Because we're all in this together. We all share this together. That's what we're here for. People that breathe encouragement into each other's lives. Could you be a Christian and never go to church? Sure. Because being a Christian is a thing between you and God. Could you be a Christian and never go to church? Absolutely. Will you be a good Christian? No. Because you can't build up yourself by yourself. You need other people around you. Not many of us are going to be Iron Man or Batman, even if we have the masks we bought at Walmart. But we can all be armor bearers. Third thing you need about this, we have to be proactive waiters. Now, I'm not talking about the people that bring me iced tea. Although I would like for them to be proactive as well. Would you like more iced tea, sir? With no lemon. Leave the lemon out. Don't get me started. Look at verse 8. Jonathan said, "Come then. We'll cross over toward the men and let them see us. If they say to us..." Now this is not a good plan. Jonathan, not a great military planner. "If they say to us, 'Wait there until we come to you,' we'll stay where we are and not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' we'll climb up. Because that'll be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands." What are you, nuts? So both of them showed themselves to the Philistines. "Look," said the Philistines, "the Hebrews are crawling out of the holes they were hiding in." The men of the outpost shouted to Jonathan, his armor bearer, "Come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson." There's a bunch of guys up there. There's Jonathan and his armor bearer. They got one sword between them. These are not good odds. So Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Climb up after me. The Lord has given them in the hand of Israel." Jonathan climbed up using his hands and feet with his armor bearer right behind him. Philistines fell before Jonathan. His armor bearer followed along and killed behind him. I don't know what he killed with. He didn't have a sword. In that first attack, Jonathan and his armor bearer killed some 20 men in the area, about a half of an acre. Now, there's two kinds of waiting. First of all, I don't like waiting. I'm not the most patient guy in the world. I don't know if you know that. Joanna works with me. My wife's married to me. They know that very well. I stand in front of the microwave and yell, "Hurry up, I haven't got a minute. Let's go." Instant oatmeal, not instant enough. You get my picture? I'm not a patient guy. So waiting doesn't come easy for me. Sitting, waiting, not good. One of the reasons I carry a phone that has email and stuff on it is because when I'm waiting, I can do things. Because if you want to torture me, don't hit me with things and things like that. That'll just make me mad. You want to torture me? Put me in a room with absolutely nothing to do and make me stay there. I'll be ready to take a hostage in about a minute and a half. I just can't take it. There's passive waiting. Like, Saul, the king of Israel, sitting under a pomegranate tree. What are you waiting for? I don't know. I'll know it when I see it. There's proactive waiting. Proactive waiting is telling your armor bearer, "Hey, let's go pick a fight and see what happens." There's passive waiting, where we say, "I'm waiting for God to do His will through me. I'm hoping that one day God will see fit to use me." There's proactive waiting where you say, "You know what? I'm going to go out and start serving people and let God bless it as we go along, and He's going to steer me in the great place." You want God's will for your life? Start doing stuff. You don't sit your way into God's will. You move your way to God's will. Start doing some things. To me, it's like those... You ever go to Disneyland and see those Autopia cars? There was one drive-thru up on up by the mall that I think about every time I go through there, because it's this long thing. It's got the bumpers, you know, the big cement curbs on the side, and it makes me want to drive my car into it and let it bounce me over like those are the cars. Now, I don't do that because it's bad for my car. But I like those Autopia cars, you know, the rides at Disneyland, because you don't really have to steer them. You can take your hand off the steering wheel, and eventually you'll hit something and it'll put you back over. That's kind of the way I look at God's will. I got the car moving forward, and if I get a little off track, he's going to bump me back the way I ought to go. I'm okay with that, because at least I'm doing something. I'm not just sitting. Oh, Lord, I want you to use me. Oh, Lord, I want you to use me. And the Lord says, hey, if you get off your behind, I could. George Bernard Shaw said, people are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want. If they can't find them, they make them. I like Jonathan's plan because it's such a bad plan. It really is. It's a bad, bad plan. If there's only two of you and the entire battalion of Philistines on the other side, the last thing you want to do is pick a fight. The last thing you want to do is give up the high ground on your side of the cliff to go down into the valley and then say, woohoo, here we are. Because they were hidden. The Philistines didn't know they were there. Understand what's going on here. The Philistines didn't have any clue Jonathan, the armor bearer, were over there. They purposely went out and said, hey guys, here we are. Now, this is not the way I would do it. If there's two of us, I would use the element of surprise. I would wait till it was dark. And stealthily, sneakily, wait till they're sleeping and then take care of them. But no, Jonathan, his armor bearer, hey, let's go yell at them and see what happens. And if they tell us to come down, we'll wait for them. Now, here's my plan. We'll go down, and maybe I can say, oh, hey, you guys, hey, come on down here. And I would say, if they come down to us, we'll fight them. If they fall off the cliff, we'll fight them. If they fall off the cliff, that's even better. They'll be easier to fight. Instead, Jonathan says, if they call us to climb up there. You ever climb? Every year at the fair, they have that rock climbing wall. Every year at the fair, I ignore the rock climbing wall. So far, I have my perfect record intact. I've never climbed the rock climbing wall. And I don't think I ever will. Why did you climb the rock climbing wall? Well, because there was a bell up there to ring. And I rung the bell. No, if you want me to climb the wall, there better be a Twinkie or something up at the top of that. There better be something up there, because I'm not climbing just to ring some stupid bell. I can stand here, down here and enjoy the bell. Oh, hey, you rung the bell. That's great. Toss the Twinkie down. So what's going to happen here? Jonathan's on the bottom. He's going to climb a hill using what? His hands and his feet. Now, I don't know how much you're aware of this. Before you get in a hand-to-hand fight, the last thing you want to do is get tired. When I was doing reserve deputy training, we were fighting over a baton. That was you have that collapsible baton. We're fighting over the baton, fighting back and forth. And this guy was taller than me and stronger than me. And I'm fighting with him. And I'm getting tired. I'm getting really tired. I'm getting worn out. I'm getting sore. And I'm thinking, this guy is going to kill me if he gets this baton. Finally, the instructor came over and says, what are you doing? I said, I'm fighting with him. He's got my baton. He says, give him the baton and pull out your gun. Oh, yeah. That makes sense. That's even easier. So now, instead of fighting hand to hand, I just toss him the baton. Here. That's yours. This is mine. Okay, it's easier. You didn't hear that. That's not true. The last thing you want to do is get all tired out, and that's exactly what Jonathan did. And why'd you do it? Hey, maybe, just maybe, God's going to give them to us. You know what? I want people who are crazy. I want people who are just willing, just crazy enough to say, you know what? Let's do it and see what happens. The greatest things that I've seen happen are the things that everybody thought were nuts. I had a friend who put on a mud wrestling tournament for his youth group. Now, he told us about this. He told us, yeah, I got mud wrestling. Wait a second. Because all I could think of was the ones you see on TV, and that didn't seem very spiritual. My head went where all of your heads went. Mud wrestling. No, he flooded this field, and he let guys wrestle guys and girls wrestle girls in mud. Then he had a concert. Everybody's standing there muddy, and he had a concert. Well, he hosed them off with a fire hose. He said it was awesome. I said, yeah, okay, but, you know, and? He said, oh, and 300 people got saved. Oh, guess mud wrestling's not so bad after all. Is that a goofy idea?
Yep.
Did it work? Yep. 300 people came to know Jesus that day because somebody had a goofy idea. I got news for you. The church you're sitting in today is a crazy idea. We didn't start this the right way. We didn't do this the way we're supposed to. Because I went to church growth, or church plant boot camp. Uh-huh, that's right, 3 days. That's right. They told us all the ways to do it. We didn't do any of them that way. We didn't start off with a small home Bible study and yea, verily, grow our way. We picked a Sunday. We started. It's gone pretty well. See, while everybody else is planning and cogitating and thinking about all the things they're going to do, we just did it. And God's blessed it. Look at this crowd. This is a church of a year that's a year old that doesn't advertise. We don't have our own building. We don't have all these grand programs. We just got a church every Sunday. We say, you know what? If you want to know Jesus, there's a great place for it to happen. And the people in the church, you guys, are the reason this church is growing. Not because we have huge programs, not because of anything else, just because this is a place where you felt something and you shared it with your friends. Is Remnant a crazy idea? Yeah. Is it working? Yeah. Why? Because it's God. It's the way God works. What crazy idea do you have for God? What can you do for God? What has been boiling in the back of your heart that you know you need to do for God? And you think, oh, but I could never do that. Why? What are you scared of? Which one of you is going to be willing to stand in the middle of the field and pick a fight? Which one of you is going to take the next crazy idea and bring people to Christ? It's time for us to go climb a cliff. It's time for us to say, you know what? I don't care what anybody else thinks. I got a pretty good idea what God wants. Perhaps God will do something great through this. Now, you may be sitting here this morning and you're thinking, you know, that's great, but Jerry, I'm not even a Christian. Well, we can fix that. You can fix that. Because I got news for you. There's a reason you're here this morning. I've said that for the last couple of months, and I believe it in my heart. There's a reason you're here this morning. You're either here this morning because you need Jesus. I'm not going to make any apologies for telling you that. You need Jesus. You need Christ in your heart because that's the only way you're ever going to find peace. You could try all kinds of other things, but nothing's going to fill you up like Jesus. And the price of admission is so cheap. It just costs you your life. It just means saying, God, I accept you. I want to be yours. It's not difficult. It's not deeply theological. It's just giving up. But for the most part, most of you here this morning, you've been a Christian a while. What are you doing about it? What are you doing with it? Are you a sideliner? Are you willing to go pick a fight? Sitting off under a pomegranate tree? Or are you looking for ways to serve God? This message today is in your face. And I make no apologies. apologies for it. That's why you pay me the big bucks. Oh, wait, we don't get paid, do we? I misthought that, didn't I? Hey, it's time. It's time. Been sitting around, looking around too long. Been sitting around, soaking up stuff too long. Taking the easy way out too long. Let's climb a cliff. Let's be what God wants us to be. Bow your heads, close your eyes. Worship band's going to come and play that song, God of the City. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to stand, sing along with them. And as they do, I want you to climb a cliff. See, nothing's going to happen until you decide it's going to happen. If you're here this morning and you need to accept Christ, pray that prayer. Dear Jesus, I want you in my life. I want your peace. I want everything that you have for me. God, I give you my life. Doesn't have to be exactly those words. It's just a prayer of surrender, and you can do it in your own heart. If you're here this morning and you're a sideline, you're saying, no, I'm tired of being a spectator. I want to be in the battle. It's your time. It's your time to answer the call, pick a fight, and go climb that cliff. Because what happens, verse 20, by the way, the part that we didn't read, says that when it caused a panic in the Philistines, and on that day, God saved Israel. An entire country was saved because one young man picked a fight. Wouldn't you love for a year from now, 6 months from now, to look back and say, and be able to write a story about what God's done in you and say, on that day, God saved the city of Imperial or El Centro or Brawley? Why? Because you listen to some goofball with a Batman, Iron Man mask, and you picked a fight and saw what God had. Stand with me, would you, and let's sing.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.